parole this for the second time. This is USA Radio News.
If you were to say, Orkin man, you don't have to go to school to kill bugs, I'd say, nobody's born an expert, my friend. I actually took entomology classes to learn that thief ants will nest right under your kitchen counters. It's not exactly good dinner conversation, but what you thought was dinner for four could really be dinner for 4,000. I still take courses to keep up with the latest facts, like how the Argentine ant has no natural enemy. Except, of course, for me. Well, this is the Orkin Man saying, if it bugs you, bug me at 1-800-ORKIN-MAN.
Markets were closed yesterday, of course, observing the National Day of Mourning for the late President Reagan. Earlier in the week, though, we were seeing some positive direction in the price of petroleum.
Oil prices took a break, moving back from recent highs. Reports of increased fuel supplies and lower usage helped to diffuse speculation. In corporate news, Coca-Cola's president and chief operating officer, Stephen Heyer, left the company after being passed over for the top job. Target sold its Marshall Fields chain and 9 Mervyn stores to May department stores for $3.25 billion. Major U.S. markets closed on Friday in observance of President Ronald Reagan's funeral. Through Thursday, the Dow and the Nasdaq both posted gains. Bobby Rebell, New York.
Markets will be open for business Monday with the Dow opening at 10,410 after gaining 42 points on Thursday. The Nasdaq will open at 1999. More news at usaradio.com. Kurt Lewis with news on the USA Radio Network.
We've got a transmitter, and we're not afraid to use it.
News Talk 1080 KSCO.
It is 5 minutes past 10 a.m., and you are listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz and AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. I'm Aaron Bond with a look at your Central Coast weather forecast for today. And it calls for sunny skies and locally breezy, highs from the upper 50s near the ocean to the upper 70s inland. Northwest winds increasing to 15 to 25 miles per hour near the coast in the afternoon time can be expected. Elsewhere, afternoon sea breezes are 15 to 30 miles per hour. Your Monterey Bay boaters forecast for today calls for winds northwest 10 knots or less, increasing to 10 to 20 knots in the afternoon time. Wind waves 2 to 4 feet, swell northwest 3 to 6 every 9 seconds. It is currently 57 degrees here on a beautiful day at the station in Santa Cruz, and we now take you to the Saturday special with your host, Michael Zwirling.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to hour number one of the Saturday special on AM 1080 KSCO. Geez, we've been, I was trying to figure out how many years we've been doing this. Has it been as long as we've had the station? 13 and a half years? Maybe. Yeah, I think so. Pretty close. Huh.
Probably more than I've been alive.
No, you're older than 13. That's for sure. Anyhow, stay with us for 2 hours. We'll have fun.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Psst. The war on terror. Yes, Virginia. Militant Islamists do want to kill us. Psst. Helplessness is not a virtue. Why we need missile defense. America the Beautiful. Why this arrogant, unilateral, racist, gun-crazed society is the envy of the world. Psst. Mark Smith is a trial lawyer, former professor of law, and also an author of the official handbook of the vast right-wing conspiracy, and will be the guest on this upcoming Saturday special. Ann Coulter calls Smith one of the fastest rising legal stars in the country. So join us this Saturday on the Saturday special from 10 a.m. to noon with your host MZ and author and political pundit Mark Smith on your Raising the Bar Really High But Not Your Glasses radio stations, AM 1080 and 1340 KSCO.
am holding here in my never nicotine-stained hands, but former THC-stained hands. No, that's not true. A copy of the official handbook of the vast right-wing conspiracy. All the arguments you need to defeat the loony left. Okay, now, here, this radio station that is a voice for everyone, including the loony left, is proud to to have as a guest the author of that book, Mark W. Smith. Mark is an attorney, and you know what? Let's just bring Mark up. Hey, you there, Mark?
Hey, Michael, how you doing? Hey. Thanks for having me on today.
You bet. Where are you? You're in New York, right?
Well, yeah, although today I'm actually in Newport, Rhode Island, believe it or not, but I usually am in New York hanging out there surrounded by liberals on Moscow on the Hudson.
Hey, now, you're an attorney. I thought most attorneys were lefties. You're an unusual one.
You know, that's right. Most attorneys like the idea of allowing all the major societal decisions to be made by unelected judges. I'm one of the few of the lawyers who don't like that. I think actually we should.
So
have
why
a
is that? I mean, it's sort of like sacrilege or blasphemy or something on your end, don't you think?
You know, it's kind of funny. In some ways, you're right. Many lawyers, many people go to law school. They believe in the good of government. They're sort of trusting in it. You know, people like Bill and Hillary Clinton, both of whom are of course lawyers, have that attitude. But I am a distinct minority in that I'm a lawyer who thinks that, you know, we've got too much government, that regulations are not the way to go. So it's kind of funny. In some ways, I personally benefit financially, I suppose, from more regulations, more laws, more lawsuits. But that doesn't make it right or good for our overall society, of course.
Sure. It reminds me of the days of Proposition 13 was first proposed for California. You know about that, right?
Right, yes.
In 1978. I was in a business, a video production business, and 99% of my clients were government agencies that if Prop 13 passed, there would be no money to hire me to make videos for them. And guess who voted for Prop 13 anyhow?
You did.
Correct.
Well, and it's true, and so many people, of course, view the government as just their employer or a way to suck at the teat of big government. And that's really what you have on the left. You really, today at least, have groups like trial lawyers, members of unions, the public teachers unions, they all want government to get bigger because, frankly, it helps them with their wallet. It's a whole lot easier if you're a social worker, Michael, to get a job working for the government, helping out welfare recipients if you have a big welfare program paid for by the state or the local or the federal government.
Mark, you in your world of attorney, brethren, you are probably not all that well-liked.
Well, you know, it depends. When I hang out with my good friends at the Federalist Society, which, of course, is the conservative group of lawyers that the left does not like very much, it's the same organization that people like John Ashcroft, our attorney general, belong to. Yes, of course, many people on the left don't like the Federalist Society. They don't like conservative lawyers. They think that we are actually working hard against the financial interest of lawyers, and in some ways we are, but you know, sometimes you have to do what's not in your best interest for the good of the country and the good of society, and that's kind of what I do in the sense that I make a lot of money as a lawyer, and I make more money if there's more lawsuits and more legal problems and more legal loopholes that people have to hire me for, but that, of course, doesn't mean that it's a good society. My view is, many people ask me, do we have too many lawyers? And I actually do not think we have too many lawyers. I think the problem is, Michael, we have too many laws. I mean, I'm a relatively sophisticated lawyer, but I have, you know, several of my own lawyers who do things, because there's just so much law out there now, Michael. No one can possibly know what all the laws are. There's so many things to trip over. There's so many loopholes and regulations. Did you know there's a federal law that dictates exactly how much water your toilet can flush? Who would know that? But that is a true story.
Yeah, that's in your book here.
Exactly.
You mentioned that in the book.
And that's what makes it so complicated, of course, for even the most sophisticated lawyers, Michael, need lawyers because of how complicated the laws regulating society have become.
Well, when you get elected to Congress or to a legislature, state legislature or whatever, what is it you're being elected to do? Make laws.
Yeah. You know,
right?
it's too bad that...
There's always going to be more laws, right, because of that.
Exactly. And, of course, if you remember when they shut the federal government down in the days of Newt Gingrich versus Bill Clinton, hey, nobody's life was affected except the people going to work for the government. We were still working just fine. I was a big believer in let's just keep the government shut down for a year and prove to the country that, you know, most of the government programs that we pay for now are not needed.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get beyond the court system, once you get beyond national defense, of course, Michael, a lot of this stuff, frankly, can be handled, you know, by private charities or by private organizations. And here's the thing. Much of what government is, the only reason why you have government programs is because people won't voluntarily pay for them if you didn't have government.
Yeah.
And that's what's kind of funny. It's like all this government stuff, if it's so needed, how come people don't voluntarily go out and do it themselves?
You fill the potholes in the streets, you mean, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm very happy. The book has done very well. It's actually a New York Times best-selling book, I'm happy to report, which is always makes me feel happy when the New York Times has to list conservative books. Because you know how the New York Times...
They must have been biting their tongue. No, you don't bite your tongue when you're in print. I guess you sort of struggle with your writing hand or your typing hand or something, right?
That's right. Of course, needless to say, the New York Times has not reviewed the book. They never seem to review any conservative books, but that's the New York Times.
Okay, I want to ask, have you always been a conservative, which you seem to be proud to say you are, right?
You know, I became a conservative. I was a young boy when Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980, and that was really the first time I got focused on politics, and I went to Ronald Reagan's inauguration.
In your mid-30s now.
Yeah, and I was in 1980, I was somewhere in the neighborhood of like 11 or 12 years of age, and I remember, you know, standing out there with my mother for several hours waiting for the motorcade with the new President Reagan to come scooting on by there. And at that point, I started to get, you know, very much interested. You know, I believed in what Reagan had to say. I was a young guy, but I still said, you know, I'm proud to be an American.
That was very unusual for young people to, well, I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I'm a little older than you. I'm 52. And when I was, I must have been, 15 years old, 15 or 16, probably 15 years old when Reagan was elected governor of this state, California. Mm-hmm. And was quite liberal-minded, as most young people were. I figured that Reagan, this he's a pretty conservative guy. I mean, good sense of humor and so forth. But I don't know. We didn't really like Reagan as young people all that much. So by the time Reagan was elected president, I wonder if that might have changed. Do you think it was sort of unusual for you to, as a young person, to appreciate Ronald Reagan back then? By that time, I certainly did as well. I had become pretty conservative, actually.
Well, there's one. I think it's more difficult to appreciate when you're young conservative economic policies, because until you really understand the disincentives created by high taxes and regulations, it's really difficult to appreciate economic policy until you get a little older and kind of realize the cause and effect of government policy and how it affects the rest of society. However, if you remember, and this is one of the things I remember liking Reagan so much for, Jimmy Carter sat on his hands and basically whined for 444 days as Americans were embarrassingly held hostage in Iran.
That's exactly right.
And I was a young, I was a young guy and I wasn't like overly political or anything, but I did feel a sense of embarrassment that you had these, you know, scumbags in Iran holding proud Americans hostage, and I just thought something should be done.
Yeah.
And even though I was only 12, I was smart enough to realize there's got to be a better way. Why don't we go in there and say we're going to kick some butt and be forceful and be proud to be an American? And that's one of the reasons why I liked Reagan. Even at that age, I liked, you know, I liked to hear him speak. I liked his message because I was always proud to be an American. And I liked his tough on the bad guys. And back then, of course, it was tough on the Soviets and tough on the Iranians leading up to the time they let him go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was really the foreign policy stuff that got me interested in Reagan first. It was only several years later, of course, that I began to appreciate what he was doing with the economics.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how much you know about our station. As the author of a best-selling book here involving politics, I'm sure you've done quite a number of interviews on talk radio stations. And I'm sure you know that talk radio in the United States tends to skew to the right.
Well, that's true, except, of course, National Public Radio is still out there. And, of course, Michael, we can't forget our good friends at Air America. although I guess they're only on the air in about four markets now since they keep running out of money without Franken.
They're not, well, I'll tell you that story real quick. You'll get a kick out of this. You know that Santa Cruz, where this radio station is based, is a liberal mecca, you know, of the world. You know that, right?
Sure,
I mean, it's on a par with Berkeley, or might even exceed Berkeley in liberal mania, you know, if you will. We are a radio station that for 10 years carried the Rush Limbaugh show. Our city of license is Santa Cruz, and the people in control of Santa Cruz despise us. They hate our guts and wish we would blow up and die and go away. Because, you know, our motto is finally a voice for everyone. However, in the 13 and a half years or so that I and my family have had this radio station, and wanting it to be a voice for everyone, the people who seem to want to use it tend to be more conservative. So as a result, most of our callers, 95% of the calls to the radio station are from conservative people, and it's not real easy for us to get guests from the liberal perspective. It's like a liberal guest will only come on the radio station if there's a liberal host, and a lot of them won't even do that. And when you mention Air America, I thought it would be a great opportunity to have Al Franken be on the air. We have two stations here. One station is our 10,000-watt station. We have Bill O'Reilly on live each weekday morning. And on the other station, it's a little weaker, but it still gets out all over the Monterey Bay area. I thought it would be perfect to have Al Franken on. And we got a lot of calls from people saying, hey, are you going to put this Al Franken show on? And I said, well, we'll see. Well, they wouldn't have us. And the reason that Air America wouldn't have us is because we wouldn't turn the whole radio station over them. The president of Air America said to me on the telephone, you can't just cherry pick the best. You've got to take our whole program schedule.
Right, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, and so I said, well, wait a minute. First of all, we can't do that because we have contractual obligations. But even if we didn't have those contractual obligations and could turn over the whole station to you, are you willing to pay for it? Are you willing to lease it or something? He said, absolutely not. We don't do things like that. You're lucky you're even talking to us.
Right.
And with that kind of an arrogant attitude, it's just amazing that they're in business at all. You haven't heard the best part, Mark. Later on, I sent him an email saying, look, we'll take Franken and two other programs for a total of 5 hours a day. And then he actually called me back and said, what other programs do you have on your station? Because he seemed sort of interested. And as soon as I said Michael Savage, the door slammed shut. Oh, Al Franken would never consent to be on a radio station that carries Michael Savage. And he started giving me this lecture about formatic purity. How you either have to be all conservative or all liberal. You can't mix them, you know?
This is
the guy who's running that organization. My parakeet could do a better job of running a radio network.
Oh, that's right. But remember, with so many people on the left, Michael, as I view it, they are not interested in debate. They are interested in maintaining a monopoly over the message. And here's the point. You know, they constantly talk about how powerful and influential the Fox News Network has become, right? I mean, you always hear that, look, the conservatives have the Fox News Network, which I don't really think Fox is conservative. I think they're actually fair and balanced. I mean, Greta Van Susteren and Alan Combs are certainly no diehard conservatives,
and they got primetime shows.
But what's interesting, and this is something that that I mention repeatedly to people because people don't realize this, but on a very good night for ratings, the Fox News Network will get somewhere between 1 and 2 million viewers. This is on a good night. Now, if you compare that to ABC, CBS, and NBC's news shows, they get over 30 million viewers a night. And that's just the big three. That's ABC, CBS, NBC, 30 million plus viewers. The Fox News Network gets between 1 and 2 million people. And guess what? The left is all upset about the Fox News Network.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because they don't have the monopoly anymore that they once did. You know, Michael, you know, as you know, the title of my book has the phrase vast right-wing conspiracy in it, and people often ask me, well, exactly what is the vast right-wing conspiracy? And the answer is, it's the group of people that used to be called the silent majority. They would vote for Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan, and nobody in California and nobody in New York City would know who these people are because they don't know anybody. They wouldn't know people that would vote for these sorts of Republicans.
In fact, I think it was Richard Nixon who first coined the phrase.
Exactly. Richard Nixon coined the phrase silent majority, and the silent majority became the vast right-wing conspiracy, metaphorically, of course, because of shows like your own, Michael. It's because now conservatives have an opportunity to converse with one another. There's actually media outlets in the form of talk radio.
Or with liberals, if they'll do it, which they usually won't.
There's actually an opportunity for debate. And I'm sure, Michael, you encourage any liberal who wants to disagree with you or with me and wants to disagree with us on taxes, the war in Iraq, you encourage them to call.
Absolutely, positively.
Unless
they break the rules and become pricks on the radio, then we get rid of them.
We encourage debate.
And
when I go to speak on college campuses or on various places, I actually prefer, and I tell the people who are sponsoring the events, that I would like to debate a liberal. I prefer debates over, like, speaking engagements and lectures, because I find that if you debate liberals, there's a lot of people who are left-leaning or sort of middle of the road, and when they see conservative arguments compared to liberal arguments, I'm a firm believer that the conservatives win the day. And I don't think you're ever really going to have a major liberal talk radio in America, because if you focus enough on the issues to be listening to talk radio, I think inevitably you become conservative. Once you realize how economics works,
I want to ask you a question. I don't know you. This is the first time we've talked. I think your book is great. I've enjoyed scanning it. I honestly haven't read it, but there's a lot of good stuff in here, Mark.
Great. I'm glad. It's a useful tool.
If you were the owner of a talk radio station in Santa Cruz, California, would it bother you that you've been characterized as a conservative radio station when all you've ever tried to be was a voice for everyone? Would that bother you? And would it become important for you to make an effort to make a strong effort to at least put on liberal talk radio programs like Al Franken? Or do you think that, hey, you know, you're perceived, and don't fight it, you know, just proudly be a conservative station, if that's what everybody wants to bring.
I say proudly be a conservative. If you're conservative, proudly be a conservative. And that's what distinguishes the right and the left in America. Conservatives admit it, that they're conservative. They don't go through the BS and say, oh, I'm a moderate, or I vote for the candidate. All this stuff. No, if you're conservative, you admit it, and you do so proudly. The difference is the left, the Dan Rathers of the world, are liberals, but they don't admit to being liberals, and that's why the American public doesn't trust them. You know, when you hear these polls about, you know, they don't trust journalists? Well, the journalists that the Americans don't trust are the people in the Beltway and in New York City who pretend to always be objective, but in reality they're not. They're leftists. So, to me, if you have a conservative slant and you're conservative, admit it, and you actually will have a far more credibility than pretending to be unbiased or and not have a view, and because people will see through that, and they'll realize that it's not true, and that hurts your credibility, which is never good if you're a media outlet. And I'm a firm believer, you know, proud to be a conservative. I mean, remember, Michael, that conservatives are who you want as your listeners, because they're the ones with jobs, they're the ones that create jobs for employees, they're the ones that pay taxes. They're the ones that buy your advertisers' products, right?
These are the people
that you want to live next door to you.
Yeah, I don't want leeches.
Right. You don't want to have people who feel the need to have, you know, suck at the teat of big government in order to live. You don't want those
people. Or suck at the teat of private people who have made some money, and that therefore they owe that money to the people who haven't produced anything. Anyhow,
exactly.
the reason I asked you if you knew about this radio station and so forth, and maybe this isn't too different from any other radio station, but I think it is in the sense that our city of license is a particularly liberal town. Okay, Santa Cruz, California. But outside of Santa Cruz, California, they love us. I mean, we get over a vast portion of California and the Monterey Bay Area. I'm really happy to hear that our first caller, I hope, is the Ed and Aptos that I think it is. He's a liberal friend of mine and one of maybe three or four or five liberal callers who call this radio station every once in a while. So I think it's nice that he is calling here, and hope that that's him. So let's bring him on to talk with Mark Smith of the Vast Right-Wing Conspiracy book. He's the author and MZ. Is that you, Ed?
It is.
Okay. Now, you have four questions for Mark, it says here on the screen.
No, I just had a few questions.
Okay.
First of all...
My question to Ed, though, Michael, is, after listening to you, how is he still a liberal?
Well, it depends on your definition. I think liberal means free of thought and able to look at arguments and pick the best choice.
Well, of course, classical liberalism is really what modern-day Republicans and modern-day conservatives are. Classical liberalism was essentially what the framers of the Constitution were.
But the
modern-day liberal is different than that, of course.
Why has the right chosen to make liberal a pejorative?
Well, I don't think the right view, I don't think the right has intentionally gone out to try to make liberal pejorative. I think reality and the way the world works and the effect of liberalism.
Well, no, wait a second, Mark.
Let me ask you this.
No, I don't think it's a pejorative term, like a nasty ad hominem attack to call somebody a liberal, but I do think it represents a label of a set of beliefs and philosophies that have demonstrated over and over and over again to fail when you try to implement them in the real world. So I don't think it's really pejorative, but it is a label of a series of policies that have largely failed.
Well, let me back up a little bit. And on the website, are you in the law firm of Cassowitz, Benson, Torres, and Friedman?
Yes.
Okay. I noticed that under your education that you went to public schools for your education. Do you believe that public education is should be performed by the government?
Well, my view on public education is I don't have a problem if there's some public education, provided that, Ed, that you have school vouchers which allow for competition among the businesses in this area, which means
question.
You want to encourage...
That wasn't
good,
my
good
question. As a lawyer, you should know that you should answer the question asked and not the question you want to answer.
Sure. I don't have a problem if there's some public funding at the local level for education, with a caveat. The caveat is that teachers and schools should have to compete for students, just like Michael has to compete with other radio stations for advertisers, and I have to compete in the free market for other people who want lawyers or for people who want to buy books.
You're actually,
there should
there
not
is no,
be a public school monopoly,
there is
Ed,
no free
because
market
then
in...
you have no incentive to do a good job. And there are many, many public schools around the country that fail to educate because they haven't been subjected to the discipline associated with competition.
Now,
and
Ed.
That's my view, Ed.
Ed, who
there
can argue?
No, there's no free market in radio. You're licensed and by virtue of being licensed, there is no free market.
Well, there is a free market.
I can't go out and get a pilot. I can't go out and get
thousands of radio shows out there, and it's not
that
hard.
Please,
you know, once you get the license, now you're competing for advertisers.
Would you please let me finish my statement? I can't go out, and if I had the money and the will, go out and immediately open up a radio station. I have to wait, apply, and get a license, and
There's a million of them for you to buy, Ed.
Well, not in the Santa Cruz area. Maybe I could buy KSMO or whatever your alter ego is.
KOMY?
Yeah.
Okay, come and talk to me about that, Ed.
Well, I don't have that pile of money. I wish that I did.
It's not much. It's only 5 or 6 mil.
Yeah, right.
But that's the point, Ed. If you and your buddies raise money, I'm sure there's a price at some point that Michael would sell, you know, his station to you at. Now, you may not be able to afford it, but if you can raise the money, you can do it.
It depends on the economics of the situation. But basically, I just was piqued by your attending two public schools. You've said it. I don't think that you can really have a free, if you want to talk about school vouchers, I don't think that you can have public education. That would actually be subverting. I think we're run by school boards, and school boards... That is your way of getting the curriculum and other things that you want done at the school is through your local school boards. I don't know how schools in South Carolina are run or if even that's your home state or not.
Well, look, Ed, here's the thing to keep in mind when you talk about...
Excuse me, where did you grow up in Kansas? I noticed there was some...
It's a very complicated answer, and I will only give you... The bottom line is I grew up in Maryland and Vermont. But here's the thing to keep in mind, Ed, about school choice in private schools. When you're talking about universities, you have true economic competition, because you can go to a state school, the University of Vermont or the University of South Carolina, or you can go to a private school like a Dartmouth and whatnot. And it's, you know, the public schools compete with the private schools for students, and that's exactly how it should be with, you know, high schools and with elementary schools. The problem is, of course, there's many people who would like to go to private schools but can't afford them, and that's why they should be given a voucher of the amount of money that would have been spent on their kids anyway, and let them decide where to send their kids. Because, Ed, certainly you have to admit that the people that know best about what's best for their children is the parents themselves, and not some bureaucrat in the Board of Education who doesn't even know the name of the kid. So, to me, we want to give the parents as much power as possible to decide how best to educate their own children, and school vouchers is a much better way than having a monopoly where you have to go to the public school unless you happen to be rich, like Al Gore and Bill Clinton and Jesse Jackson and Ted Kennedy, who send their kids over and over and over to private schools instead of the public schools they insist everybody else sends their kids to.
Do as I say, not as I do.
If somebody wanted that, felt that strongly about their curriculum, I'm sure they could go to the school board and be heard at the school board level. I don't think.
But then they get ignored. I mean, this is not. Believe me, people try this all the time. They try to influence the politics. They're worried about these schools being too left wing, and they try to influence and they fail. I can tell you, you can go with all sorts of proposals to the school boards. I'm sure in many of the cities out there in California, you can pick them for me. And there's no way that. For example, they would, let you read an Ann Coulter book or something like that as part of the curriculum.
Well, my original point in asking is that the amount of money that has to be used by the, or excuse me, when I went to went to the state schools here, and we had an excellent system of education, college education in California, and it's under attack because it's being underfunded, and for instance, I wanted to go to the local junior college and take German. Well, there's not enough funds to provide the class that I'd like because of the cuts in funding for the.
Oh no, Ed! There's plenty of money, but you know what the problem is? The problem is that the universities spend a lot of money on stuff that has nothing to do with real education. You go ahead and open up the website for the UCLA or USC or any of those schools out there, or Berkeley, and you look at how much money gets spent on student clubs, like, you know, the gay and lesbian club and the We Love Animals club, and all that money that's getting spent on those clubs. Hey, why not just take it away and use it on real education? And if you look at all the money spent on the bureaucrats and on silly other things that have nothing to do with actually educating students, well, there's where the money goes, Ed. That's why you don't have your class.
No.
Not because the taxpayers aren't paying enough money.
I don't buy your premise that the schools, the clubs like that, are funded by the schools. Those are private clubs, and their funding comes from the individuals that participate in the clubs. And I'm sure that things like that are, that those clubs, if any club that are funded by their members and not by the. I'm sure that one of the first clubs that's
you say one thing and Mark says the other thing, Ed. So I don't know that we're gonna be able to solve that. But we do appreciate your call to the Saturday special and hope you will call again. It's KSCO AM 1080 MZ with special guest Mark W. Smith, author of the official handbook of the vast right-wing conspiracy. You got a website, Mark?
I do not for this, but if anybody's interested in getting the book, it's in all bookstores in America. It's online, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's a New York Times bestseller, so there won't be any problem finding the book out there.
And it's a witty, all-in-one handbook of conservative responses to liberal lunacy.
That's right. It's designed. This is the handbook that I use when I go on Hannity and Combs, or when I debate liberals on TV. These are the arguments that I use on all the topics, and they're the same arguments, Michael, that your listeners can use when they're debating their liberal brother-in-law this summer at the picnic or their liberal buddies at work.
I had a nice talk with Alan Combs the other day in New York. I attended the new media seminar for Talkers Magazine.
Yes.
And Alan was one of the In fact, Sean and Alan were both there. And I had a nice talk with Alan because we are an affiliate of his program, Fox News Live, on from 7 to 10 p.m. on KOMY, Monday through Friday. And he was telling me how a lot of liberal he has a lot of former liberal friends who can't stand him because he's on Fox News Channel.
Right.
And it's just, I think that's such a shame.
Well, it is a shame. Of course, there's the story where Al Franken yelled at Alan Combs for not being tough enough at an event about a year ago. And, you know, a lot of the left thinks that Alan Combs is not sufficiently left and, you know, allows Sean to talk too much. But the reality is, I think Alan Combs is a very effective interviewer. He has tough questions. He's a true liberal. Anybody who's read his book knows that or watches him on the show knows that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they don't like the fact that he's on the Fox News Network because, remember, Michael, to the left, it's all about monopoly over the message. It's not about informed debate.
Right. Okay, we did have a caller, Dave in Santa Cruz, who says, it says here on the computer screen, a radical liberal likes station and agrees it is a voice for everyone, cell call. So he dropped off. Dave, if you call back, we'll put you at the head of the line here because I really want to hear what you have to say. I believe another caller we have, is this Pat on line two, Pat in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, hi.
Hey, you're on.
Hi, good show.
Thank
I like,
you.
My favorite kind of programming is when you've got people from both or from all sides of a position on the show simultaneously.
It's getting harder and harder to do that, though, Pat. It's really, really hard, you know.
I'll take your word for it.
I like those kinds of programs, too. But
most, I think most listeners would agree on that, regardless what their position is. It's good to hear in real time people go back and forth because you can always flay the opposition if they're not there to defend themselves.
Yeah.
And that's true of any position you're taking.
Okay.
But the point I wanted to make, early in the show, your guest stated that there's too many laws. And I think everybody would agree with that. And also, I think everybody would agree that people like the laws that they already agree with, and they don't like the ones they don't agree with. So in that sense, people would like to get rid of all the laws they don't agree with and keep the ones they do. Well,
I'm not sure I agree with that. No, I'm okay. Go ahead. Never mind. Go ahead.
I could ask you to cite examples of laws you don't like that you'd like to keep, but
I'm just sort of being stupid.
Yeah, well, I think we'd have, and I know you hate me to bring this up, but if you're talking about a voice for everyone, you know,
even people who think there's too much population.
Yeah, let's face it, that is a core problem that just gets ignored more than every other problem. You know, we're talking about widening a highway, we're talking about too many laws, we're talking about funding for kids at school. I mean, and you got people having a lot of kids, they can't afford the kids. I mean, all this stuff gets right back to overpopulation, and yet if I try to bring it up, it seems like, oh God, it's population, Pat, don't you ever talk about anything else? Well, actually, you know, I'm talking about a core problem, and you guys are talking about symptoms. If we have too many laws, just imagine, back, you know, when this country was founded, when there were fewer laws and, you know, there was the wild frontier, if we just left the wild frontier wild, you know, we wouldn't have all those laws that came with the bringing of more and more and more people. That's a no-brainer. I don't know why we can't talk about it. If you got a, you know, Dolores Huerta, let me just give you an example of a liberal that spoke up here at UCSC recently. She has 11 kids. And she's telling everybody about how poor she is and how, you know, she needs help. And I'm thinking to myself, how come she can have 11 kids and not anybody challenges her on that? I think there, you know,
she has a right.
She has a right to say whatever she wants.
She has a right to have as many kids as she wants, too.
Well, there you go. Now that
she shouldn't have that right, is what you're saying,
no,
right?
That's a core problem, which I really, this is the conversation that never happens on, I don't care if it's left-wing or right-wing radio, the problem that never gets discussed is if somebody has the right to have all the kids they want, but they can't take care of them, then what? The right-wing says you can't have birth control. If they had their way, most right-wingers would either actively or acquiesce to the fundamentalists in the right-wing that don't want birth control. And so you're going to have more and more and more kids. and then you don't take care of them. So there's a dilemma, and nobody wants to discuss that dilemma. And
do you want to discuss it, Mark?
Sure. I think there's a – well, Pat raises lots of different issues. It would be hard to touch on all of them, but a few general observations. The first thing, when you look at population growth, we have to remember that the country has more – the United States today has more people in it than at any other point. And yet, things like food prices are at basically all-time lows. In other words, the long-time concern on the left in America was that we would have too many people and we would deplete our resources because we wouldn't have enough resources to support.
Could I interrupt you
population.
Just momentarily?
The reality
there
is,
are conservatives that agree with that. That's
sure.
Not necessarily a right-wing or a left-wing position.
Well, right, but the reality is the left, and I understand that, you know, that when you start talking about population, Pat, as you know, you do get some splits, you know, between the left and the right.
Yeah, the left, let me quickly, I could say real quickly, the left says if we distribute, okay, we're going to be all right.
It's often a concern about the
conservatives.
Only one can talk at a time. Unfortunately, you're both coming in on the same pot, so I can't individually vary you. So let Mark finish, because you've been talking a long time, Mark, Pat.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
You know, as I point out in my book about population growth, is for a long time, the environmentalists have tried to use population growth as a scare tactic to say that because we have Earth has limited resources, if we have lots and lots of more people, they're going to tax our resources, and the prices of all these natural resources, everything from, you know, gas to oil to food prices, will skyrocket, and we'll have massive starvation. The reality is, in the United States, and in most of the world, it's gone the reverse. We have more people living in the world than ever before, and yet food prices have fallen dramatically. Natural resource prices have fallen dramatically. The bottom
That's
line
changing.
Is there's no overpopulation problem when it comes to that. If you have a population problem, it's a matter of associated with – if you have people starving like in North Korea, it's really a problem of government policy not allowing people to produce food that they can then let people eat. But the other aspect about population is you say the right wing in America really supports the idea of no birth control. I don't think that's true. I think there are some very devout Catholics, perhaps, that don't who disagree with birth control. But by and large, I think using forms of birth control is widely accepted among conservatives and Republicans. I don't think that's really a political issue. But I do agree with one thing you said, Pat. I do think that, yes, we all have a right to have as many kids as you want, but we do not have a right to steal money from another person in the forms of tax dollars to make that other person pay for it. In other words, it's true, I have the right to have 10 kids, but I do not have the right, in my opinion, to take money from Michael and Pat to pay for my kids. And if I have children that I can't support,
then what?
Then the solution is, you lose them. You know, if the government, my view has always been, if the government has to start paying for your children, your government has now involved itself in your reproductive life at your request. And as a result, I think the government should have a say in your reproductive decisions in the future.
What do you
and
mean
I,
specifically?
I, you know, I've always said that if, you know, you have like a single mother that's having a bunch of kids, if they want to have welfare and keep the kids, then perhaps there should be, you know, mandatory, you know, NORPLAN or mandatory birth control for these women, because frankly, they have a right to have the kids, but they don't have a right to my money to pay for the kids.
So you're talking about mandatory sterilization?
Not necessarily. No, I don't think it has to be when I say mandatory, I think it's a quid pro quo. If I have a bunch of kids and I can't support them and I go to the government and say, "Hey, you know what? I've got these kids. I can't support them. I want Michael and Pat and my next-door neighbors to pay for my kids." Well, guess what? I am now involving Michael and Pat and my next-door neighbor in my reproductive decisions.
We understand that.
And I think that, Michael
but
and Pat at that point should have a say in my future reproductive decisions.
Now,
right,
Pat,
but
how can you argue with that? Be honest.
No. What I think we're getting somewhere here. But mandatory sterilization, we have discussed how ultimately you get in this dilemma where somebody just keeps having kids they can't afford. You either have to let them starve, or else you have to have the government take care of them, or question is where everybody wants to change the subject instead of going into great depth, which is exactly, again, the conversation that is missing in public discourse.
Okay. Well, we have given quite a lot of time to this subject, so it's time to change it. The phone numbers are 479-1080 or 477-1340. Thank you very, very much, Pat. We appreciate hearing from you. We have open lines at 479-1080, again, 477-1340. We have an open fax machine at 475-2967. And we have an open email box, always, at mz@ksco.com. Our guest today is Mark W. Smith. He's a trial lawyer, former professor of law. Why former? How come you're not doing that anymore?
there's only so many hours in the day, and the amount of time it took me to get the book together and do other things, I decided, going to focus on practicing law and being an author. And you got to give up something. There's only so many hours in a day, Michael.
Would you prefer to be a best-selling author all the time?
I personally like the practice of law because I come from a sports background, and I like to live and work in a zero-sum world where there's a winner and a loser. So to me, my work as a trial lawyer is somewhat analogous to being a professional athlete in that I like to win. My clients want me to win for them, and I try to win for them. And I like that sort of combat in a way. It keeps me sharp, and I enjoy the debate of a trial. So I like the practice of law. So I don't think I would want to be a full-time author, but I certainly enjoy doing it on the side, which is, of course, I've been doing with this book, and I'm happy to report, as you know, it's a New York Times bestseller. So I'm glad this first book is successful.
Okay, we are going to take a commercial break in just a moment here, but I want to put this out. This is a passage from the book, Liberal Lunacy. Here's one of your liberal lunacies here, and this is a quote. Reagan's tax cuts created huge budget deficits, placing U.S. taxpayers $1.5 trillion in debt, unquote. Okay, now you say it's true. The U.S. government was $1.5 trillion deeper in debt when Ronald Reagan left office than when he became president. That deserves a thoughtful, carefully considered response. Ready? Here it is. So what? In the 1980s, we were in the middle of a Cold War against the expansionist Soviet Union that had already killed tens of millions of its own citizens in the name of a communist utopia. Gee, what does that sound like? More recently. The Soviets had made it plain again and again that they intended to take over the world. Reagan understood that destroying the Soviet Union would not only save the American way of life, but would also pay great economic dividends. By treating the Soviet Empire for what it was, an anti-human freedom, quote, evil empire, Reagan embarked on a high-tech arms race that the Soviet Union could neither afford nor sustain. And American children no longer had to fall asleep at night worrying about the nuclear holocaust depicted in the movie The Day After. Okay. Well, see, this is good stuff. I mean, there's nothing particularly witty about that, about your explanation there. But what I get from reading the publishing press release about this book, Mark, is that there's a lot of good, clever, snappy comeback type arguments that you need to defeat the loony left. That's what I like. But let's when we come back from the break, let's talk about some of those things. Okay?
Happy to.
Great. You're listening to the AM 1080 KSCO Saturday Special with MZ and special guest Mark W. Smith, author of The Vast Right-Wing Conspiracy. Our phone numbers are 479-1080 or 477-1340. Give us a call if you want to participate. We will be back after this commercial break.
May I have your attention, please? The Capitola Mall and KSCO KOMY cordially invite you to attend a very special Flag Day celebration of area veterans on Monday, June 14th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Capitola Mall. You'll enjoy a flag ceremony from the Boy Scouts and a special presentation of representative veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, and Iraq. There will be free ice cream and patriotic gifts, compliments of our friends at the Capitola Mall, and there will be live dance music from Dizzy Burnett and Grove Co. from noon to 2 p.m. But above all, we'll have the opportunity to meet the area's veterans and personally thank them for giving so much of themselves for us. Bring your family. Bring your friends. Bring yourself to the first annual Flag Day celebration of veterans at the Capitola Mall, Monday, June 14th. The ceremony begins at 11 a.m. sharp in the promotions court, but the refreshments, live music, and company of your veterans runs till 2 in the afternoon. Thank you.
Ladies, how would you like to be a member of a family-run business? How would you like to belong to a health club that focuses on you in a warm and friendly atmosphere? Well, I'm Teresa, and I'm the owner of Go Figure Fitness for Women in downtown Santa Cruz. Go Figure is not a franchise or tied into one. We're the small fish in the big sea. Our members are number one to us, and we'll take great care of you. Go Figure is an all-women's health club that focuses on the whole woman, including your nutritional needs. A membership at Go Figure includes one-on-one personal training, weight loss and nutrition counseling, along with the ever-so-popular 30-minute circuit with no hidden fees. Go Figure carries the complete line of the American Longevity products. So come join a club that takes care of the whole woman and is member-friendly. Go Figure, located in downtown Santa Cruz. Call 426-3948. Again, the number is 426-3948.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangero. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangero family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Our Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both Gilda and I and my son Dino look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
Here's the bad news. Credit card companies are charging up to 22% interest these days. Now the good news. If you're a homeowner, there's a good chance that you can save a lot of money on credit card debt with a tax-deductible mortgage loan, even if your credit rating is low. Hi, I'm Jim Chubb with Pacific Inland. We would love to help you save money by consolidating credit card debt with a new home mortgage. Please call us at Pacific Inland today, 475-2600. That's Pacific Inland at 475-2600, licensed by the California Department of Real Estate.
We got music and weather for you here on KSCO.
And welcome back to hour number one of the KSCO Saturday Special. Today, the topic of which is the vast right-wing conspiracy. That's the name of an official handbook that I am holding in my hand. And on the telephone, we have its author, Mark W. Smith. The vast right-wing conspiracy, the arguments you need to defeat the loony left. Give us a call, 479-1080, 477-1340. It's 5 minutes before 11. When we go back, well, here, let's bring Mark back up and ask you, Mark, the events of the last week with the passing of our 40th president, Ronald Reagan, what are your thoughts about how the left is reacting? They seem to be having a nervous breakdown about all the media attention that's been given.
Well, the left in America is gritting their teeth in light of the overwhelming love shown and respect shown by the American people to Ronald Reagan, and the left realizes this is extremely bad for them in this upcoming election because the dilemma that faced Ronald Reagan, which really wasn't a complicated one, but the left tried to make it, was how do we deal with the evil empire of the time? How do we deal with the dangerous utopian vision of the communists to take over the world in their name? How do we deal with this totalitarian regime and its attempts to destroy us? And Reagan obviously successfully won the Cold War by being firm and tough and aggressive, and by labeling them the evil empire, which is true. Now, many people have forgotten that on the left, when Reagan was trying to build up the military and be tough with the Soviets, the left hated him. They thought he was a warmonger. Remember the joke about Reagan, R-A-Y?
Yeah, they still do.
They do. But here's the thing. We now have seen, with the benefit of history, that Reagan's policies and Thatcher's policies were dead on, that the Soviets were the evil empire, and Reagan's tough, aggressive policies helped destroy them. Now we face a new issue. We face a new fight, a fight against Islamic terrorists. And then they have a choice between George Bush, who wants to be Reagan-esque in the sense of, you know, fight them hard, make the sacrifice, kick their butts, and don't try to appease them, versus John Kerry, who really at the end of the day just wants to use the United Nations to try to, like, make nice and appease a group of people that cannot be appeased.
Well, what concerns me is that I think there's so much hatred for George W. Bush that just that alone would get Kerry elected. I mean, and that's it's a terrible thing to say, but maybe this demise of President Reagan came at just the right time. I don't know.
Well, the people that hate George Bush because of what's going on in Iraq are the same people that hated him in 2000 when Al Gore lost the election. It's not really, it's not like a new group of people that hates George Bush. The overwhelming number of Americans understood that the planes that flew into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon on 9/11, these were not Hollywood props. These were real planes that killed thousands of people, and the economy lost about $1 trillion in a single day. So the American public understands that something needed to be done in response to 9/11 to prevent this from happening, and that's exactly what's going on with our invasion of Afghanistan and our efforts in Iraq. Now, yes, the liberals are going to spend a lot of time talking about how men are dying and servicemen are dying, but at the end of the day, the Americans will put that into perspective and realize, as I point out in the book, that yes, it's true, as of today, I think there's been about 750 some odd, maybe almost 800 people now, I think, have died in Iraq. But keep in mind that last year in 2003 alone, 600 people were murdered in New York City.
Yeah.
And wow. Think about that. There were about 500 people murdered in Chicago in 2003. 600 people were murdered in New York City in 2003. We lose about, in Vietnam, we were losing 18 soldiers a day. In World War II, we were losing 222 soldiers a day. And then you compare that with what's going on in Iraq.
You're not old enough to have you know, had an opinion at the time on the Vietnam War, I don't believe, right?
No, I was too young.
Yeah.
I was too young to have an opinion at the time on the Vietnam War.
Too bad. I'd be interested in that at the time. I know you must have an opinion of it now, but we will get into that next hour. We have another hour ahead here on the KSCO Saturday Special. We hope you will stay with us, and we hope you will join us. This is KSCO Santa Cruz, KOMY Watsonville. We're going to go to USA Network News and back in 6 minutes.
USA Radio Network News. I'm Kurt Lewis. The 105-millimeter howitzers fire 21 final times in salute to the once commander-in-chief who was buried last night as the sun set in the Pacific Ocean, an ocean visible from the hillside where President Ronald Reagan will rest until the resurrection of the dead, a resurrection his son Michael believes is assured because of his father's faith in Christ.
The gift that he gave to me, the gift that he was going to be with his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Michael Reagan was followed to the lectern by his younger siblings, Patty and Ron, who recalled their dad's commitment to freedom and his belief in that resurrection.
The idea that all people are created equal was more than mere words on a page. It was how he lived his life.
You see, he said, new life always comes out of death. It looks like nothing could ever grow in this field again, but things do.
Under military precision, the flag that has been covering the casket this week folded and presented to First Lady Nancy Reagan, and she leaned over, kissed the casket containing her husband of 52 years, gently stroking it, and then her children helped her walk away, holding that American flag that had covered the casket. The late president passed away a week ago today at his home in Los Angeles, triggering a week of memorials and tributes that began and ended at the Reagan Presidential Library. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. If you love your lungs, then purify the air in your home with the same technology used in our U.S. submarine fleet, the same advanced technology that's in my Orrick tabletop air purifier. I call my air machine a lung saver. You'll call it a miracle. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200, and breathe easier with the best air purifier you can buy.
Hi, Orkin Man here with a little advice about home maintenance. Keeping bugs out is part of it. Yep, somewhere between cleaning the gutters, mowing the yard, and defrosting the refrigerator lies me, the Orkin Man. Glamorous, I know. See, 83% of ants, roaches, and other pests get in from the outside. Before they ever reach your welcome mat, call me at Orkin. I'm trained to put down a protective barrier to help keep bugs from ever getting in the first place. This is the Orkin Man saying, if it bugs you, bug me at 1-800-ORKINMAN.
After 3 days of fruitless deliberations, the Terry Nichols jury has deadlocked on whether or not the convicted Oklahoma City bombing killer should get the death penalty or not.
The jury deliberating this sentence for Nichols told Judge Stephen Taylor they were unable to reach a unanimous decision about his punishment. That means Nichols will receive another life sentence in addition to the one he is currently serving for the deaths of 8 federal officers. While victims' relatives say they are disappointed, they feel they finally got justice for their loved ones. Before this trial, no one had been charged for their death. Some of the victims' relatives said they would like to see Nichols serve his life sentence in Oklahoma rather than a federal penitentiary. Terry Cordingley, McAllister, Oklahoma.
A North Texas police officer struck and killed this morning by a suspected drunk driver who's now been charged with intoxicated manslaughter. The city of Grapevine police officer was directing traffic at the scene of a pre-dawn crash when he himself was hit by the suspect. The officer was married, has 4 children, now left fatherless. USA Radio News.
Genie Garage Door Openers will not clean and wax your floors in one easy step. Genie Garage Door Openers will not help you get a more comfortable night's sleep on a firmer mattress. They will not help your children get hooked on reading. No. All Genie Garage Door Openers will do is let you get into your garage. Year after year, they're that reliable. And they're made in a wide variety of models to fit your needs and budget. Genie Garage Door Openers. They can't do everything, but they do what they're made to do very well.
Today being June 12th, it was 10 years ago today, the ex-wife of NFL star O.J. Simpson, Nicole Simpson, and a friend of hers, Ron Goldman, were murdered, leading to what is still one of the most controversial prosecutions in history.
Ron and Nicole were both viciously stabbed and left for dead on the back steps of her L.A. condo. O.J. Simpson was immediately considered a suspect and questioned, but later released by authorities. Then the first of many bizarre twists in the case would come less than a week later.
This is AC. I have O.J. in the car.
Simpson surrendered following that slow speed chase, and while in jail, managed to assemble a legal dream team.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
He was cleared in 1995, but 2 years later, a civil court found him liable and ordered him to pay millions in restitution. Today, O.J. Simpson lives in Florida and adamantly maintains his innocence. I'm Rory O'Neill.
And in business, the markets were closed Friday in observance of the National Day of Mourning for the late President Reagan. More news at usaradio.com. Kurt Lewis with news on the USA Radio Network.
Less music, more talk.
News Talk 1080 KSCO.
It's now 5 minutes past 11 a.m. and you are listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz and AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. I'm Aaron Bond with a look at your Central Coast weather forecast for today, Saturday, June 12th, and it calls for mostly sunny skies and locally breezy, highs from the upper 50s near the ocean to the upper 70s inland. Northwest winds increasing to 15 to 25 miles per hour near the coast in the afternoon time are expected. Elsewhere, afternoon sea breeze 15 to 30 miles per hour. For your boaters forecast today, winds northwest 10 knots or less, increasing to 10 to 20 knots in the afternoon time. Wind waves 2 to 4 feet, swell northwest 3 to 6 feet every 9 seconds. It is currently 63 degrees here at the station in Santa Cruz, and we now take you back to the Saturday special with your host, MZ.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Well, look here. It says caller wants Reagan remembered by putting his face on a $40 bill. What a cool idea. Hey, why not? No one would be offended.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
And I'm going to open hour number two of the Saturday special on AM 1080 KSCO by relating a personal story I have involving my... One time, what should I call it? Encounter, I guess, with Ronald Reagan. I was a student at UC Santa Cruz at the time when Reagan was governor of California, and because of that, he had the ex officio position of president of the Board of Regents for the University of California. So we had a regents meeting held at UCSC one day back in 1969, I think it was. And everybody was all excited about the governor coming, and he did come, and he showed up in I think it was sort of like a military type bus. Now, it was a bus that we usually use to cart people around the campus, because it's a vast, very large campus in and out of the Redwoods. And Reagan, I believe, was the only person in the bus, and he was transported up to where the meeting was going to be, and us students mobbed the bus when he got up there, and I jumped up on the ledge of the bus, and I happened to, right on the other side of the window, about 2.5 inches from my face, was Governor Reagan's face. And the kids all around me were hollering and yelling, saying, Governor, listen to us. Oh, roll down your window. Dialogue with us. We are the future political leaders of tomorrow. And what did Governor Reagan do that I thought was funnier than hell? And I think most of the students did too. He took out a yellow tablet and wrote on his pen in great big letters, "I'll sell my bonds." And he pressed it up against the window, and he chuckled. You could tell that he had a great, he thought that was really funny, and so did the rest of it. At least I did, anyhow. So that was my one and only encounter with then Governor Ronald Reagan. And that was a good 35 years ago, I guess. Welcome to hour number 2 of the KSCO Saturday Special. Our special guest today is attorney Mark W. Smith. He's a trial lawyer, a former professor of law, and member of the Bar of the United States Supreme Court. He appears frequently as a conservative commentator in the national media, and he's a conservative pundit and best-selling author. With his book that I hold in my hand, The Vast Right-Wing Conspiracy, the official handbook of the vast right-wing conspiracy, Arguments You Will Need to Defeat the Loony Left. Mark is with us as our guest on the Saturday special. He'll be with us for another half hour or so. And if you want to talk to us, give us a call at 479-1080 or 477-1340. Let's see. Let's bring Mark back up here. You there, Mark? Okay, you there?
Michael, I thought that's a great story that you just told about Ronald Reagan and his sense of humor. Uh-huh. And that dovetails in nicely to a lot of things. Most importantly, why I think conservative talk radio shows like your own do so well, and you don't really have liberal talk radio shows, is because conservatives like us, we have a good time with politics. We're able to, make fun of the liberals, tease the liberals. We take politics seriously, but we still have fun. And Reagan took his job very seriously as governor and as president, but he never lost that sense of humor, even when he was talking about the most important issues, like, of course, when he was almost assassinated. He made the famous joke. He looked at the doctors as they were wheeling him into the operating room to remove the bullet, and he turns to them and, of course, famously says, "I hope you guys are all Republicans today."
Yeah,
I think your story speaks a lot as to why conservatives can do very well in a national dialogue, because I don't think we come across nearly as self-righteous and indignant about everything as so many on the left do.
But otherwise, we're pretty inept in other areas of the media. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, we certainly could do better. I think it used to be Republicans had a horrible time getting their message out. Certainly before Reagan taught us so much. But I think things are changing. I think with the rise of talk radio, the existence of the Fox News Network, and most importantly in some ways, the rise of the Internet, where people can get the raw news feed from the Associated Press before Dan Rather gets a chance to edit it and screen it for us, it's made a big difference. Because, Monica Lewinsky story was on, for example, the Drudge Report.
Yeah, it
for about a week
might,
before
it might not have broken
it
at all if it wasn't for the Internet and Matt Drudge, right?
Exactly. Uh-huh. The story that Newsweek and Michael Isikoff, who wrote the story about Monica and Bill Clinton, the fact that they were sitting on that story for a week, and Matt Drudge says they're sitting on a story about Bill Clinton having an affair with an unpaid White House intern that was on the Internet for a week before anybody in television mentioned it. And but for that, on the Drudge Report, it's likely that no one ever would have even known about Monica Lewinsky and, of course, the fraud that she helped perpetrate on the court in the Paula Jones case.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the phone line. Well, actually, before we do, I want to ask you one question.
Sure.
When you mentioned Air America earlier last hour, I sort of jumped in, so I didn't know what you were going to say. Have you been a guest on Air America?
You know, I haven't.
Have
and
you been
I'm
asked?
Sure that no, I'm not aware of any conservative who has. But what's interesting about Air America, of course, is the stations that they've taken over were predominantly Asian or black. In other words, they were taken over predominantly minority-owned and minority-run and minority programs.
And the way they're taking them over is they are buying the stations or trying to buy the stations, but in lieu of being able to outright purchase the radio station, because it takes some time to do that, and each transaction has to be blessed by the FCC. They are doing what we call time brokerage agreements in larger cities. Now, they told me that there's no way in the world they're going to buy time on my station, but I was willing to give it to them just as a service to our liberal area.
Right.
You know? But still, we weren't good enough for them. It just blows me away. Anyhow, so you have yet to be invited to be a guest, and I don't think you should hold your breath.
No. The only liberal who's had me on, at least the only liberal on radio who's had me on about the book, is Alan Combs, who, of course, I know from the Hannity and Combs show. And Alan, I think, is better, of course, is a fair debater and is willing to listen to the other side much more so than I think Al Franken and a bunch of the others are.
Right. Okay. It's Mark Smith, author of The Vast Right-Wing Conspiracy, on the Saturday special. We have open lines only on 477-1340, so give us a call if you want to get in. We will definitely get you on. It's 14 minutes past 11 a.m. Let's go to the phone lines. Jeff, about black helicopters? What's this all about? Jeff, you're on the air.
No, Jeff calling from a black helicopter.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Anyway, I'm glad you have this guy on here. I wanted to talk about something, you know, that deals with the war on terrorism. You know, we hear all these ideas that the you know, if you look at the war on terror and some of the terrorism that has occurred in India, some of the terrorism that has occurred in other places of the world besides the Middle East, okay, at least you think the liberals could make some sort of progress and admit it's not just the Jews' fault anymore that is the cause of terrorism. You see what I'm saying?
Well, you know, when you talk about the war on terror, we always refer to it as the war on terror, but I think we really know that what we're really talking about is a war against militant Islamists. Although, yes, I guess it's Irish Republican Army may still engage in some terrorist tactics occasionally, and you have other terrorist organizations around the world who have particular agendas. What we're really worried about is the organizations that attacked us on 9/11 and attacked the USS Cole and our African embassies. These are the militant Islamists. And the reason why they are particularly dangerous is because they hate us because of who we are and what we represent. They do not hate us because of our foreign policy. So there's nothing we can do to change to make them stop trying to kill us.
Well,
the only thing we can do to change so they'll stop trying to kill us is to become militant Islamist and bow down to Mecca several times a day. And unless a nation does that, they're going to try to destroy us.
Well, like with Jacques Chirac, I call him Jacques Iraq. The thing, you know, I read a statement of his in the paper where he said, well, unless we do something about the Israeli-Palestinian situation. And I see that as his indignation for the Israelis bombing that nuclear reactor in Iraq. He's still mad at Israel, and he's going to do anything he can to scuttle us to win the war on terror. And I view him as an enemy.
Yeah, Israel has nothing to do with this. Remember, Osama bin Laden did not even mention the Palestinians prior to 9/11. That was never his issue. His issue was, among other things, having U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia and things of this nature. He didn't care about the Palestinians until after 9/11. The Palestinians, the whole Israeli-Palestinian thing is just, frankly, a canard by the militant Islamists who want to point to it. But the reality is, even if we gave all of Israel to the Muslims, they would still try to blow us up because we're not holy as they view it and as they read the Quran.
My main point there is concerning Jacques Chirac. Is he really a friend or a foe? I really see him as an enemy of the United States. I don't see him as our friend at all.
Well, I think the French leadership is very upset that the United States is so powerful that French opinion is really meaningless. The French can hold their breath and jump up and down all they want about a particular policy, and if the United States disagrees with it, it's not going to happen. And that bothers the French tremendously. And that's why a major agenda of the French and the Germans is to try to check the United States more than check the militant Islamists. We also have to keep in mind, and I agree with your views on Jacques Chirac, because in some ways I don't think he's really a military enemy, but he's not a man that can be completely trusted either. We have to keep in mind that the militant Islamists, yeah, they may do some terrorist attacks on France and Germany, but they really want to kill us. They really want to go after the great Satan, and the great Satan is us. So we have the most to lose in the war on terror, more so than Germany and France, which are not the big targets in the world in the viewpoint of the terrorist. We, the United States, are the guys with the bullseye on our forehead that they want to blow up.
Yeah, so Europe really has shifted on its axis, like Donald Rumsfeld said.
Yeah, well, I do think there's a difference between the old Europe and the new Europe, because the new Europe is still young enough. They remember what it was like to live under a totalitarian, oppressive regime, and the French have forgotten about that.
You know, Michael, you know what you ought to do? Is you ought to start playing some of the old sound bites from Ronald Reagan when he was talking about the how we're going to fight terrorism. You know, when he went after Libya.
That's an idea.
And I think it would be very interesting, you know, and for the airwaves, in case just in case Ronald Reagan's spirit's out there floating around, goodbye, good friend.
Yes.
Farewell, good friend.
Jeff, thanks for your call to the Saturday special. Our next caller is going to be Dwight in Salinas, who knows why we lost the Vietnam War. He's on line three. No, he's not on line three. Dwight must have just hung up. This is terrible. Well, Dwight, call back because we'd like to know why we lost the war in Vietnam. Now we're going to put on Marcella.
Yes. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Marcella. You're on the air. Here's Mark, and here's MZ.
Hi. I'd like to disagree with your premise that we have a predominantly liberal media. The fact is that there are over 600 lobbyists in Congress from the pharmaceutical company, also the vast majority of the TV ads and the magazine ads are brought to you courtesy of the pharmaceutical companies. So when you say that Dan Rather is a liberal, that's hogwash. They only report news so as not to hurt their pocketbook. One good thing about when Reagan was governor of California is he signed the Latterman Act, which created the 21 regional senators. And at that time, only 5% of the caseloads were autism. They are currently 70%. And Governor Schwarzenegger is trying to undo the Latterman Act. And I would like you to discuss the 3,500 cases right now sitting in federal vaccine court of parents that filed because their children were injured by mercury-laden vaccines. You talk about big government. They keep adding more and more vaccines. Now there's 40 by the time a child is 2 years old. Within the first 12 hours of birth, we are mandated to give our children an unnecessary and dangerous vaccine, a hepatitis vaccine. They
is
just
that right?
Mandated.
Wait a minute. Is that true?
Yes, it is. They also mandated flu shots for children as young as 6 months, and 90% of these flu vaccines that are going to come out this winter, 90% still have thimerosal. We are creating a generation of sick children, and not just autistic. 1 in 8 children are in special ed.
Mark, have you heard anything about this?
I am not aware of exactly what vaccinations have to be given to newborn children. So I don't
know. Every state is different, but as soon as the CDC recommends one, the majority of the states just rubber stamp them. Most of these vaccines have not been properly tested. Right now, every day in the United States, 50 children are diagnosed with severe autism. In California, it's 13 a day, which is 91 a week. These children, which will live a normal lifespan, will cost taxpayers $400 billion by the year 2010.
Marcella, how is it you know all this?
Because I'm the mother of a severely autistic child, and I go to the Internet, like you said, is the only proper source of information. The media, who's supposed to be so liberal, has failed to report this. There's not one news story about this autism epidemic. Right now, 10 states are trying to remove mercury-laden vaccines, and Congressman Dave Weldon of Florida is putting through Bill 4169 on a federal level to try to remove these mercury-laden vaccines. This is bigger than the war on terrorism or 9/11. I'm sorry. We are raising a generation of children that are drugged. And, again, the pharmaceutical companies...
I certainly feel for you, Marcella, in your plight, in your quest to...
This is not just about me. This is
but,
about
but you've
the
made
mandate
you've made a statement that I don't accept, okay? I don't think that that's bigger than the war on terrorism. Thanks for calling the KSCO Saturday Special. Our next call is going to be Nick in Hollister.
Yes.
You're on, Nick.
Welcome back, Michael.
Okay, thanks.
I don't know where you were, but you disappeared there for a while. I was just going to say that being raised as a child from a family that came out of the South after the Civil War, and my grandmother, there were one word, damn Yankee. And I became a Republican and also conservative for two reasons. And one was the first time Ronald Reagan ran for governor, there was a big controversy in this state. We didn't have withholding tax. And the liberals, the Democrats, were saying, well, it's too painful to write that check at the end of the year. You know, that's a big check, and that's really painful. And Ronald Reagan was very clear and precise. He says, taxes should be painful. You should know what you're paying to the government. That way you'll know what to demand from your government.
That's great.
And he lost that battle.
I think that's a brilliant idea.
Pardon?
This is an idea that I have encouraged people to talk about. The idea that we eliminate, at least at the federal level, we eliminate mandatory withholding of employees' taxes, and we force Americans on April 15th to actually cut a check to pay their taxes and pull the money out of their bank account and send it to the IRS, because that will reform the government like nothing else.
Yeah, but what are the chances of that happening, Mark?
Unfortunately, right now, I don't see
government.
No one even
no,
really talks
governments
about
don't
idea,
give up
that
things.
That is a brilliant idea, and I would love to see that happen because that will change everything.
Okay, here's a question for the attorney here. Okay, why is it that there isn't a national initiative process like there is a state initiative process? Because that would be the way to get what you would like to happen and what I would like to happen.
Well, when you say it's a national initiative, are you talking about like a referendum like you have in California?
Yeah.
You do sort of have a national referendum in the form of the constitutional amendment process, but of course that's very difficult to get.
Yes.
Yes, there is absolutely nothing that prevents Congress from providing a mechanism whereby the American public could essentially have a referendum on a particular
except that will lessen
question.
Their power, so they're not going to do that.
Yeah. And they're not, and we have to remember that one of the notions behind the constitutional scheme of government that was put together by the framers was the idea of checks and balances. And that's why we had the three branches of government. They were all supposed to compete with each other. The House of Representatives was supposed to be elected by direct vote of the people. Senators, as you know, originally were not voted by direct vote of the people of a particular state, but by the state legislatures. And there were supposed to be all these checks and balances to make passage of laws pretty difficult, because they knew that laws are very oppressive, and they wanted fewer laws. So they wanted to do anything they could to discourage the willy-nilly passage of laws. Now, we've sort of lost a lot of this and lost a lot of the checks and balances that existed 200 years ago, thanks to the way the Supreme Court has interpreted the Constitution. But, yes, there's nothing today that stops Congress from passing a law that says there can be a national referendum on certain questions. But I've never heard anybody in Congress talk about that. And I don't know, you know, off the top of my head, Michael, I don't know if that would be a good or a bad idea. I guess it depends on the issue.
If what would be a good or bad idea?
Whether or not you allow for the passage of federal laws by a national referendum, like a direct vote of the people.
Well, if it's a good idea for a state to have that kind of a mechanism, why wouldn't it be a good idea for the federal government to have that kind of a mechanism?
Because you get into the issue of federalism. One of the problems, Michael, with having a federal law that applies to the whole nation is it discourages the inventiveness and creativity and experimentation that we can get if one particular state tries something. For example, let's say if you pass a law that says everybody has to wear a red shirt in the country, then everybody in the country has to wear a red shirt. But if just the state of California passes it, we can then see what is the state of California like where you have a law that says everybody has to wear red shirts. And then you can experiment and see how it goes. And like school vouchers, we can now look, Michael, at like Milwaukee in Wisconsin and see how the school voucher program in Wisconsin is working for people in Milwaukee. And if it works, we can then have other states try it and see if it works for them. And if it doesn't work, we will not have done it on the national level. One of the problems with the war on poverty, which was, as you know, came about in 1965 with Lyndon B. Johnson announcing the war on poverty, was that that was a nationwide anti-poverty effort. And it would have been so much better to have tried those let's subsidize welfare in certain states first to see how it worked out, as opposed to nationalize it. Because if you nationalize something that doesn't work, guess what? The whole nation pays the price.
Same as globalizing things, huh? Yeah,
exactly. So it's better to have Vermont. So I'm a firm believer in let Vermont have one set of laws, let California have a different set of laws, and then we can look to see which set of laws work better, Vermont's or California's,
sure.
And we can learn. But if you have the whole nation with one set of laws in a particular area, we have no way of knowing if there's a better way of doing it because there's no room.
So why don't we start with an initiative in California with your withholding idea?
Yeah,
I mean, I think that's a brilliant idea.
Well,
California's referendum
is a national thing, and California now looks at your 1040 form, and I think 45 of the states do the same thing. They don't even depend on their own state tax collection; they depend on the federal government.
Right.
They force you to turn in your federal form.
But
yes,
I agree. And you know, Michael, I think there are a lot of conservatives. Certainly, the grassroots conservatives would be completely behind this idea, the idea of eliminating federal withholding.
Yeah, but you know what? I've got to say this, guys. That's one thing the progressives or liberals have on the conservatives. You know, hands down, is the ability to do something and not just talk. Like the conservatives tend to do. And I don't know whether the conservatives are lazy or because they're too busy out making a living so that they can pay the taxes for the liberals or whatever. I don't know what the deal is, but will either of you disagree with me that I've made a correct statement?
Yes, no, you very definitely. In fact, Michael, the other thing that turned me around completely, and being a Democrat, I worked very hard. My little kids went out and we worked very hard for Alan Cranston. And then, because we worked very hard, I met the man personally, and that was the final straw. I mean, that was the end of being a liberal. I mean, he was the most mealy-mouthed. He was, he wanted a committee to tell him what to say. He had no ideas of his own. He went with the wind. And we just had a president who did that just a little while ago. The man from Arkansas, who I have absolutely no respect for, he was amoral and had no opinions of his own. He went with the wind, whatever looked the best. That's not the kind of leadership I wanted. And we don't have that now, and we certainly didn't have it with Ronald Reagan.
Certainly didn't have it?
No, we had a leader who knew what he wanted to do and got it done. Yeah, he didn't. You know, you could have your own opinion, and that was fine, but he knew what he had to get done.
Right. Okay.
But glad to see you back, Michael.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Here comes, who's next? No one's next except you, Mark and me. We got plenty to talk about, but if you want to chip into the conversation, there are lines open at 479-1080 or 477-1340. I haven't checked the email lately, but I will here, and... if you want to send an email to mz@ksco.com, that's a good way to get through and participate in the program that way. We're talking with the author of The Vast Right-Wing Conspiracy, Mark W. Smith. He's been called one of the fastest rising legal stars in the country by none other than Ann Coulter. Oh, cool. So anyhow, Mark, make a prediction about the election here. Do you think who's going to be the president?
George Bush is going to get reelected.
No question, huh?
I don't think there's any question. I think that John Kerry is unelectable. His record over the 19 years in the Senate, he cannot run away from. He's been on the wrong, he wants higher taxes, more government. He's been bad on defense, bad on the death penalty, bad on guns. He essentially is a true Massachusetts liberal's liberal, and the American public's going to reject him. Look, is the war in Iraq going perfectly? No, but wars never do. The American public at the end of the day is going to say, you know what? We needed a strong leader who was going to be proactive and aggressive after 9/11. George Bush has done that. Maybe it hasn't been perfect, but John Kerry has certainly not offered up anything that's better than what Bush has offered. And as a result, the American public's going to overwhelmingly vote for George Bush. And we already see that in the polls, which I don't give a lot of credence to. But the polls that we do see show that, John Kerry, people who don't like George Bush don't necessarily, that doesn't translate into necessarily more votes for John Kerry.
Okay, here's a stupid question that I shouldn't ask, but I can't help myself. If Clinton were running against George Bush this fall, who would win?
Bill Clinton is one of these famous, fantastic politicians who is very articulate and can spin all sorts of tales.
Anybody, except maybe you and me.
I think that if Bill Clinton were running, I don't know if he'd be. I think Bill Clinton would be a tougher guy to beat than John Kerry. However, we have to keep one thing in mind, that Bill Clinton never had to run and get reelected in a post-Monica world. So we don't know.
Or a post-9/11 world.
Correct. So Clinton would be running in a post-Monica world and a post-9/11 world. And that
difference. Do you think that it makes any difference at all? Do you think that any person who ever voted for Bill Clinton was affected in the least by the Monica Lewinsky affair? I sure don't.
I think you had the so-called Reagan Democrats probably were affected by the whole Monica Lewinsky affair.
Really? Wow. I hope you're right and I'm wrong.
To many liberals, government is their god. Nothing that you say or do will ever persuade them to abandon their god of government. And those people would have voted for Bill Clinton no matter what. But I do think there are many people like the senator from Georgia there, Zell Miller. I don't know why I lost his name there, but Zell Miller is a classic example of sort of a conservative Democrat who is really, he's not a Republican in name yet, but everything but. And he's a guy that would not vote for Bill Clinton because of Monica Lewinsky. And there are people like Zell Miller out there among the voting population. But it's very curious. I mean, look, Bill Clinton had a chance to, elect Al Gore, and he lost in 2000. So I don't know if Bill Clinton would win against George Bush today. But John Kerry certainly can't beat George Bush. Kerry's record is just too liberal for the country. He has no explanation as to how he would have done a better job in the war on terror than George Bush. And we have to remember, John Kerry supported a lot of what George Bush has done. So it's going to be very difficult for Kerry even to distinguish himself.
One of Kerry's advisors called him into the room the other day and said, "Why the long face?" Let's go to Susan in Corralitos. Susan, you're on the KSEO Saturday special.
Yeah, that's a really good old chestnut there. It's a great conversation you're having this morning with your guest, Mark, and I wanted to chip in about why conservatives don't appear to be as active as Democrats or liberals sometimes, and why it's so hard to get them organized.
Because they work for a living.
Well, they work for a living. And a lot of the people that I've seen that go to community planning meetings and things like that are actually paid by non-governmental organizations to go to these meetings.
That's right.
They have all these organizations that are funded by the Packard Foundation, the Pew Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation. They hire these people to effectively become paid lobbyists to the government. And so, they can go to the Planning Commission meeting because it's their job. and they have an undue influence over what goes on.
Okay, you have brought something up that had escaped me, and I'm sure you're right, actually. You know, the Packard Foundation. Julie Packard, who I think she heads up the Packard Foundation now. I could be wrong. I know she heads up the Monterey Aquarium.
Yes.
And all of the, you know, oceanographic activities that happen here in the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary. She is a resident of Santa Cruz, or at least was, and I assume she still is.
I think she still lives up in the hills above SoCal.
I think so. Very nice woman. We've had her on KSCO once or twice a long time ago. High time to ask her to come back.
And that'd be great.
Maybe we can talk to her about that. Be good.
But I'd also like to ask your guest, at some point in time in our government, starting with the federal government, I believe, it became legal for the government to pay a non-governmental organization to do what the government normally does. And for an example, it used to be the Parks Department would maintain all the parks and the lands that the state was trying to conserve or the federal government. Now they give the land, they buy it with taxpayer money, and they give it to non-governmental organizations to manage. And this doesn't seem constitutional, and I can't for the life of me think of when the law changed that allowed the government to anoint an organization that might have a political view that goes against what the average person believes, like the Nature Conservancy and the Sierra Club and all those groups. They're very far left. And yet we have to spend our tax money supporting these organizations. We build these huge portfolios for them, billions of dollars worth of land, and the public has no say over what goes on the land because they're private organizations. You don't get to look at their books. You don't get to audit them. You don't get to get meeting minutes from them because if you're not a member, it's not the government. But they act like the government,
Mark,
and they
and
get
I
paid.
Are both disgusted with the sheer numbers of laws, but that brings to mind a law that should be passed. If a non-government agency is going to be asked to be in charge of something using public funds, then they must at all times be open to having their books audited by anybody, anywhere, at any time.
Well, they would need to be a politically neutral organization as well. But
yes,
a question for your guest is, when did it become okay? Because it wasn't okay when I was a child growing up in this country. The government
I'll
would never
Mark
dream.
Mark doesn't know the answer to that question. Do you, Mark?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I can't give you a specific date. But the issue of using private companies to fulfill governmental duties is in some ways, a conservative idea in the following way. Let's say the government is responsible for delivering the mail, right? They got the post office. One can certainly, as a conservative, make the argument that says if the government is going to be in the area of delivering the mail, it is best for the government and the taxpayer to allow private companies to compete with one another to provide the services with the lowest bid. And then you allow, you know, different competing companies to bid for, let's say, a 3-year contract to deliver the mail, or nowadays even, you know, run the penitentiaries, or to build a government building. We have to remember that a government building, you know, if we want to build a new government building in Washington, D.C., well, the people that are going to be building the building will not be actual, for the most part, not actual employees of the Department of Interior or the HUD. They're going to be private contractors that will have won a government contract. And, you know, government contracts with private companies, I don't think that's particularly new. And in some ways, that's a conservative idea because, you know, you essentially encourage competitive bidding. Just like if you wanted to redo your bathroom, you would have several contractors bid for your job, let's say.
Certainly that's always been the case in the military because provisioning and that kind of thing has to happen by the government contracting to different companies to do this. But here's the deal. The government is now contracting with non-governmental organizations, not companies, not public companies.
Quickly, Susan, what's an example?
Well, an example would be this commission down in Santa Monica that was commissioned to preserve some land that the government had purchased down there. And it turns out the people that were running it were siphoning money off the top. They were using it for private means, paying off their mortgages and their house loans and buying themselves vacations. And because it was a non-governmental organization and a private one, their was no ability to go and look at their books and audit them and monitor what they do. And they also have an agenda that's a very political agenda. That is, it promotes a certain political ideology, which I don't believe the government should use taxpayer money to do. So now they're trying to create...
Wow, this is going
to
have to be the subject of a whole program. So we want to thank you for it. We got a full board of callers.
Thank you.
So thanks for calling.
I appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. Thanks for calling in. Okay. We're going to have to let you go pretty soon because I know you've got to move on here. Let's see. That's Tim in Scotts Valley, I guess, is next. Brother Daryl, Boss Landing, Paul in Aptos, and Richard in Watsonville. Let's just do it in the order received here. Tim in Scotts Valley, you're on the KSCO Saturday Special with MZ and Mark Smith.
Good afternoon, or actually good morning. I was calling about the concept of having some experimentation in the state governments following law or passing laws.
Okay.
And a success story really is the state of Florida was the first, I believe, in 86 to come up with a concealed weapons permit and has subsequently had a decrease in marketed decrease in crime, and I think 27 other states have followed that good law and implemented themselves. And I just wanted to—I know your conversation has migrated far beyond that.
Yep, I think that's a great example of how the state of Florida in 1986 enacted a concealed carry law that allowed individuals who were law-abiding and had no criminal record to be allowed to carry handguns on their body concealed. And you're absolutely right. The violent crime rate in all categories, whether it be rape, homicides, or robberies, fell dramatically. And as a result of the statistics that came out of Florida, many other states have since adopted concealed carry laws, recognizing that an armed citizen is one of the most effective crime deterrents. And Florida is a great example of that, and it set the precedent for states everything from Missouri to Texas, and many, many others have followed that lead.
Okay. Hey, great. Hey, thanks very much.
And the reciprocal, of course, would be, I believe, any kind of law passed in Massachusetts with the homosexual gay marriage will consequently fail in other states. So I think let's let the states decide.
Okay. Thanks for calling the Saturday Special. Let's go to Brother Daryl in Moss Landing. You're on the air on KSCO, Brother Daryl.
Brother Mike and Mark.
Hey.
Hey, I just wanted to point out that I believe I'm correct that Bush in the 2000 election, where he won the election but got less popular votes than Al Gore. But nevertheless, I believe Bush got more popular votes in the 2000 election than Clinton got in either of his elections because it was a three-way race with Ross Perot in there for Clinton. So I believe in a straight Bush versus Clinton election, if you wanted to go hypothetically simply by the popular vote, I believe Bush got more popular votes than Clinton got neither of his.
That's right. You know, and actually, I think I know in 1992, Bill Clinton received less than half the votes cast for president. And I think that was also the case in 96, where Clinton barely, and yes, of course, in America, we elect our president with the Electoral College, and we want that because if you don't do that, that means no presidential candidate would ever leave New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, and the big cities. They would never campaign anywhere but the big cities, and they would just completely ignore states like Vermont and New Hampshire and Maine that don't have a large population.
I was listening to someone recently who said that in this next election, the 2004 election, that it looks like Bush has a lock on 32 states, and the election really is going to be decided in the 18 remaining states that are either now are solidly Democratic or are the leaning states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, those states.
That's right. It's going to be the swing states of Michigan, Ohio, Florida, states of that type. Missouri is a swing state this year. It's going to come down to the swing states once again.
So those of us in California can vote, 100%, if God forbid, for crazy Kerry, and it won't make any difference because whether Kerry carries California by one vote or unanimously, electorally, he's going to get all of our California electors.
That's so, right, and that's likely to occur. Although, Arnold Schwarzenegger certainly pulled off a nice win there in California. I don't know if the Bush administration has decided to spend a lot of money in California, though. I think they may have decided that they're not going to spend a lot of money out there.
That's right. It'd be more important to the campaign that they win those marginal states or those battleground states that you just mentioned. But it again, everybody should brush up on how a president is elected. These polls that show the Rays being a 44-44 tie doesn't tell the story.
Yeah.
It has to be done by state-by-state basis.
Thanks for calling, Brother Darrell.
And, you know, the national. One other point, Michael, on the whole national polls. Whenever you pick up the paper or you look on TV, they talk about, you know, these national polls. Then what you ask yourself is how many people did they actually survey? You find on a big poll.
They're not scientific. They're not even close.
Yeah, maybe they survey a little over 1,000 people, but put that in perspective. Take 50 states, divide 1,000 people surveyed by 50. You know, you have 20 people representing a state. And can you really find 20 people in California that are as a representative sample of the whole state? You can't even do that for Rhode Island, which only has about, you know, a little over a million people.
Mark, there are people who want to talk to you, and I want you to stay, but I know that you had to leave.
Oh, yes, I appreciate what
I don't want to cause you to be late or something, but keep it.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I look forward to talking to you again. And
best of luck with your book,
A
Vast Right-Wing Conspiracy, available everywhere. It's a neat book. It's a small book. It's not horribly expensive. What is it here?
Oh, it's like $14. It has all the arguments that you need to debate your liberal friends. And for committed conservatives who are frankly too busy to read all the books out there because you're actually working and raising a family, this is the book you need to give you the arguments you need to win for conservatives with liberals at work.
And if they put Vast Right Wing, if they put your name in a Google search, Mark W. Smith, I mean, wouldn't it, I know you don't have a website, but...
If you know, Mark Smith, Official Handbook of the Vast Right Wing Conspiracy. I mean, it's a New York Times best-selling book, so it'll be very easy to find.
Continued success to you, Mark.
Thank you, Michael.
You have a great one. You take care, and we'll have you on again sometime.
Wonderful. Love you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, Millie in Rio Del Mar, you're up next on the Saturday special. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Sorry.
About what?
A previous caller, several back, felt compelled to mention the Lewinsky saga yet one more time, referring to Clinton's immorality.
Immortality, okay.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Okay, but I never hear the Republicans ever mention the names who were brought up at the impeachment trial. They were actually outed, Senators Hyde and Livingston. I hope that rings a bell with some of you.
Unfortunately, not with me.
Goody two-shoes people who all you, with your selective memories, can only think of Monica, whereas both Hyde and Livingston were outed as gross adulterers during Clinton's trial.
May I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Did we catch you chewing?
Yes. I'm finished. Well, I knew they were ahead of me, so I was, you know, okay.
I think we should take a break. So let's take a break.
I'd like to make my point, please.
Oh, okay, well, if you are finished chewing, then that would be fine.
Okay, sorry about that. Anyway, both of them, Hyde didn't resign. However, Livingston, who was about to be voted in as Speaker of the House, declined suddenly, and Hastert took over. But Hyde broke up a family of five for his adultery, and he described this as a youthful indiscretion at age 45, that was, you know, like 20 years earlier. Livingston had notorious adultery with a staff member. So, I mean, the whole thing, you never hear about those two senators. They're still around.
Well, now we have, because you called the Saturday special.
Yeah, and I'm glad that a few people know that some of the senators, the goody-two-shoes types, like Hyde especially, are just as horny as anyone else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, anyhow, thank you for calling,
Millie.
You're
welcome. Thank you.
Take care. Now, we're going to take a commercial break, and we're going to come back with the final minutes of this KSCO Saturday special for Saturday, the 12th of June, in the year of our Lord, 2004.
May I have your attention, please? The Capitola Mall and KSCO KOMY cordially invite you to attend a very special Flag Day celebration of area veterans on Monday, June 14th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Capitola Mall. You'll enjoy a flag ceremony from the Boy Scouts and a special presentation of representative veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, and Iraq. There will be free ice cream and patriotic gifts, compliments of our friends at the Capitola Mall, and there will be live dance music from Dizzy Burnett and Grove Co. from noon to 2 p.m. But above all, we'll have the opportunity to meet the area's veterans and personally thank them for giving so much of themselves for us. Bring your family. Bring your friends. Bring yourself to the first annual Flag Day celebration of veterans at the Capitola Mall, Monday, June 14th. The ceremony begins at 11 a.m. sharp in the promotions court, but the refreshments, live music, and company of your veterans runs till 2 in the afternoon. Thank you.
America is a country of entrepreneurs, so it should come as no surprise that if you're a small business owner, you're helping shoulder the lion's share of the U.S. economy, and that's no easy load. Good thing you can lighten it a little at Sam's Club. Sam Walton created Sam's Club to give small business owners the purchasing power of big businesses. So no matter what kind of small business you own, when you shop at Sam's Club, you get everyday low costs on items you need every day. And to save you time, we offer click and pull and fax and pull. Convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order online at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. And at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. Now that's teamwork. And we're proud to be a small part of your team. After all, while you may be carrying around the weight of the American economy, you shouldn't have to do all the heavy lifting by yourself. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
Station of wonderful music, KSCO.
I know they're great jingles, but that is such a snoozy jingle. You probably didn't know that, right?
I could play some punk rock for you if you want.
Sure.
I don't have any with me.
Oh, okay. Let's go back to the phone lines then. Steve Hartman is in the studio. We're going to hear some words of wisdom from him, but not until we hear first from Paul in Aptos and Richard N. Watsonville. Paul, you're on.
Hi, Michael Paul Sanford. And hi, Steve. How are you? I don't know if you can hear me. Anyway, can
the
you hear me,
Paul
Michael?
Sanford? That's amazing.
You know, Steve doesn't know I do a Steve Hartman impression when I do shows for you guys.
Do it now.
Hi, thanks for calling me, Michael. So quickly, two very short comments. One is I think it's a cheap shot. The continual references to conservatives and Republicans are hardworking people who have to pay taxes, and the Democrats and liberals.
Okay.
You know. And secondly, I am a liberal and a Democrat who would not vote for Bill Clinton again. I loved his policies generally. It's not because he had sex in the Oval Office. It's because he lied about it under oath to the grand jury, which I find reprehensible.
I think you're very unusual. I think most people of your political persuasion would sweep that under the side and say everybody lies about sex.
There's no question about it. No, I agree. But we're all individuals. Finally, I was concerned about the inane comments by a previous caller about the government giving out work to these private organizations when we as taxpayers must demand nothing less. If an essential service can be provided more efficiently from the private sector, then we have to take it. And that's what Mark agreed with. There's no distinction then between the private corporations and nonprofit corporations if they can do it more responsibly, more efficiently. And secondly, all the nonprofit associations are in fact accountable. At least they are in this county. They all get audited. They all get scrutinized. And I do think that would be a great topic for another program at some point, this myth about, you know, about these nonprofits and them not being accountable and so forth, and that big conspiracy. I think that's a sadly...
Well, I don't think they said the nonprofits are not accountable, that caller. I think what the caller said is it's a private, it's a non-government agency, and because of that, they're not accountable.
Yeah, but then she said it was fine for the it was fine for the Postal Service because they didn't have an agenda. But I'm glad we all agree on that. I interpreted her remarks differently, that she said when it was a for-profit corporation was okay, but when it was a not-for-profit organization, it's not. But either way, I think we're all on the same page. If the government can provide services and they can do it cheaper and more effectively using private dollars and private workers than they should.
Absolutely.
Well, I wish you guys have a great day. I know you got a busy show, and welcome back, Steve.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Yeah, he's just visiting. He says so. Thank you, Paul. Thanks
have
for waiting. Talk to you later. Okay, our last caller of the day will be Richard N. Watsonville. How fitting. Richard?
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Fine, Richard. How are you?
Tell Steve I said hello, huh?
He's here.
Hello.
Steve is a true... Steve, hey, Steve.
Hello.
Now, there's the voice of a true Vietnam veteran. Wish I could say the same for Mr. Olson. He was on a carrier. He never even saw Vietnam. Wasn't he on a carrier?
I don't know, Richard.
If he was on a carrier, he was 60 miles off the coast and never even saw Vietnam.
All I know is I appreciate all who served our country in whatever capacity.
Well, I wish I could have done what you did. So, there.
Who, me?
Yeah. I would have loved to have gone to UCSC and jumped up on the side of the bus and talked to Bonzo's boss. The other thing I had to say was, why is it George Bush spends $150 million on promoting himself to be reelected, and his numbers are not going up in the polls?
Because he can.
Okay. Thank you.
There goes Richard N. Watson. Okay, Steve. Steve.
Don't you just love it? The city of Santa Cruz, in its infinite wisdom, decided to put together a $137 million water improvement program. So as of last Wednesday, water rates in the city of Santa Cruz went up 20%, effective immediately. The city says they will double by 2009, 5 years down the road. People, what nobody's telling you is if they raise your water rates 20%, they also raise your utility tax on that water 20%. Hope it feels good.
Steve, have you taken a leave of your senses?
No.
Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because people are so damn stupid. It amazes me that we walk around.
Are you talking to our KSCO listening audience?
I am. They don't get it.
How do you feel, ladies and gentlemen,
they're getting
for Steve
pushed
Hartman
right
to be called
out
you?
Of this community,
yeah.
Because you don't see that it's just another trick to take your money away
from
you.
Are you going to come on and do a program about that, or is it just your appearance here?
I'm kind of fed up, you know.
But still, okay. Well, you're all. We'd love to have you if you're willing to. Okay. Hey, that's it for the Saturday special. If you want to hear it, thank you. If you want to hear it on demand, go to ksco.com and click Saturday special, or just type in saturdayspecial.com anytime on demand. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Rosie. Thank you, Kay.
I'm Kurt Lewis. One last time, the F-15s of the United States Air Force fly overhead with one pilot peeling away from the formation, signifying the missing man and showing honor to the former commander-in-chief who was committed to final burial last night as the sun set over the blue Pacific, right off the coast of President Ronald Reagan's beloved California. After a week of magnificent ceremony, last night was a time for Ronald Reagan's three surviving children to share their memories and reminiscences.
We look forward to those Saturday mornings when he would pick us up sitting on the curb on Beverly Glen as his car would turn the corner from Sunset Boulevard, and we would get in and ride to the ranch and play games, and he would always make sure it ended up a tie.
Tennyson wrote, "Sunset and evening star, and one clear call for me, and may there be no moaning of the bar when I put out to sea." My father added, "We have God's promise that I have gone on to a better world where there is no pain or sorrow. Bring comfort to those who may mourn my going."
Because he never tried to make anyone feel small. Powerful as he became, he never took advantage of those who were weaker. Strength, he believed, was never more admirable than when it was applied with restraint.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. I travel a lot and stay in hotels. And when I put my bare feet down on a hotel carpet, I want to know it's clean. Luxury hotels use Orrick vacuums. You can bet they'll pass the barefoot test. Orrick vacuums lift the pile and make carpet look years younger and, yes, feel soft under your bare feet. I'll send you one to use for 30 days. If you don't love it, you don't keep it. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
If your career interests are in a field involving electronics, drafting, or information technology, you need to have the required knowledge and skills. Get started by calling ITT Technical Institute. ITT Tech's programs offer both classroom theory and hands-on training in a practical lab environment. For an ITT Tech brochure, call 800-626-1300. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. Limited transferability of credits. Call ITT Tech at 800-626-1300.
It's been 10 years.
Los Angeles Police Department right now is actively searching for Mr. Simpson.
O.J. Simpson's ex-wife, Nicole, and a friend of hers, Ron Goldman, viciously murdered 10 years ago today, setting in motion one of the most bizarre legal odysseys in U.S. history.
The ultimate, most important question and legacy of the O.J. Simpson trial, of course, is did he do it? Most everybody has a strong feeling, but whether he did it or not, word now is he's up for a reality show as a host. He's living the good life in Florida.
Legal analyst Royal Oaks believes one of the most unpleasant ramifications of the highly public O.J. trial is the now common public 24/7 fixation on celebrity legal woes, including the most recent involving Michael Jackson or Martha Stewart. Though charged, Simpson was never found guilty of the murders, but 2 years later,